Okay, we are go, I think. This is a podcast about the Aquabats, right now about the Aquabats Super Show. I am joined by, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Caitlin.
Caitlin is what we're going with today. And?
Lita.
Very good. And I think we have a theme song, a very short theme song. Which is strikingly familiar to me, but it's just a theme song for today. We're just going to go with that. So, let's talk about the Aquabats.
Let's.
I introduced both of you to the Aquabats, as I recall.
You did.
You, because you're my sister, and it's awesome, and I wanted to share the Aquabats with you. And you, because you're my little girl, and I was like, you should see this, it's awesome. So a little bit of background, the Aquabats were originally a ska band, like a third wave ska band in California, like OC area. And this all happened when I was like in junior high and high school and stuff. And I didn't know anything about it for years and years and years. And that's okay, you can wear that if you want to, Miss Kate.
Lynn.
Caitlin. So I didn't know about them at all for a long, long time, and then they got a TV show, which I gather took them a number of years to do, and by the time they got the TV show together, they'd already established a number of personas, which they are superheroes, and they play music, and they fight bad guys, and they just wanted to make a TV show, and it was really awesome. So I saw it on television because I was watching My Little Pony, I think, on Hub.
How old were you then?
Yeah. It was only a couple years ago, so I was probably like 32.
If I had Hub, I'd watch My Little Ponies.
Yeah. Wait.
Sounds fun.
Why would you watch My Little Pony? Aren't you too old for My Little Pony?
No, you're never,
too old for My Little Pony.
My Little Pony's fantastic, but we're talking about the Aquabats. So, after it was done, I think the Aquabats came on, and I had like the show, I had the TV on for some other reason, and I turned the TV back on, and it was still on Hub, and so I saw what looked like a show that I'd seen that was called The Aquabats, which I actually thought was, like, luchadors at first, because
they do kind of look like luchadors.
It's masks. It's the masks, definitely.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And so I thought, you know, I didn't know what this show was about, but I happened to have heard that they were involved with Matt and Mike Chapman, who we love through Homestar Runner. Lita and I are both huge Homestar Runner fans. As well as a number of other of our friends. So I'm like, oh, that guy looks familiar. Who is that? I think we were watching the one about the haunted paddle tram. And he's in that one. So,
yes.
So I saw it and I'm like, oh, I think I can see a cameo of Matt Chapman. I'm going to like watch this. And then Eagle Bones stepped onto the screen and I was a goner because I think Eagle Bones is really cute. And from there, I
watched
the
show.
But you
saw he was really cute?
Yes, that's true. That was the first thing that got me hooked on the show. And the second thing was that the show is really hilarious.
Wait, why did you think Eagle Bones was cute? How?
What do you mean, how? You don't think he's cute? Which one do you think is cute?
Ricky.
You think Ricky is the cute one?
Yeah.
Okay. Which one do you think is the cute one, Lita?
I think Ricky as well.
Really?
I think so.
I'm outnumbered
that
two
or
to
Jimmy.
One.
I do like Jimmy the robot.
Yeah?
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
So anyway, watched the show through, loved it, watched all the shows, like, and it was really, like, excruciatingly hard because they were only on once in a while, and I had to wait, like, 2 weeks for another episode.
But then you had the DVD, and then you introduced it to me because you gave me the DVD, and you're like, watch this! And
yeah,
I did. Because I was like, alright.
That's pretty much exactly how it went down.
Yeah, it was yeah. Good times.
And I've listened to all their music since, right?
Yeah. Like, you burned me a CD, too.
Right, of their music. Alright. That, I think what you're doing, Caitlin, is adding additional sound, which we do not need. So if you could cut that out a little bit, it would be awesome. And we can continue. So, we want to talk about the first episode of the Aquabats Super Show, because that's what I'm most familiar with. Not being super familiar with the band, if we were in California, which we're not, I would be seeing them a lot whenever they performed. But we're not. We're far away on the opposite edge of the country. So sad. Anyway, first episode is called Manant. Let's start describing what happens in this episode.
Well, let's start with previously.
Oh, previously on the Aquabats Super Show, we see some footage which
doesn't make sense.
Because it is not on. It is not. They're just. There's parts of show that art, a TV show.
So you think it's from unaired clips
yes.
that they cut. I heard, actually, that it is from an unaired pilot, which we have on DVD in the other room, which we're going to watch and get to in this series, if we keep doing this series. From an unaired pilot, which the name escapes me. Taco Trouble? Tortilla Trouble? Something like that.
I don't remember. Probably something about food, though. That makes sense.
A couple times. Yes. So we saw some footage from that, and that was previously on the Aquabats Super Show. Then we get the show theme song and basically the best action sequences all cobbled together and with a really kicking theme underneath, which I love. Then, you know, we get those sort of splash panels, like comic booky, where, like, somewhere on a raft something.
It reminds me of that book
somewhere
we used to have.
When they find a sub, which is from a show, which we will hopefully get to.
Right. Something like that. At the beginning, they always introduce it with these little splashy.
Like that book we used to have that you would push the button and say, a worm on a chair in my spaghetti.
With big pauses in between, like that.
Yeah, it was really funny.
So, we open with the Aquabats. They're performing a birthday concert in somebody's backyard next to a pool. So fun looking. I want to go to this birthday
party. I don't know why I wasn't invited.
There was a pool. Everybody, there were people in the pool listening to water. And guess what? The song said, we'll party forever. And guess what they did?
They
party all night.
All night.
Party in the USA.
Perfectly exactly right. They party all night long. We don't stop. We never end. My favorite, I put a little heart next to this bit, is my favorite bit among, like, four or five favorite bits of the episode, where they're performing it in the morning, like, the wee hours of the morning, and they're, like, sluggish, and they're going, we don't stop. We never end.
At least it's honest lyrics.
Yeah.
But the one thing is, the girl was staying awake all night, and her hair is in a mess, and she's not asleep, and she said, you have to go already? They should have went 5 hours ago!
Yeah, it just seemed like they were playing a long, long time at this concert.
She must have been having a really good time, though.
Yeah.
So she wanted them to stay, you know?
Okay, so they don't sing, they have to leave because the Burrito Brothers is under attack. They can see off in the distance an explosion has happened, and it's clearly in the direction of the Burrito Brothers Burger Shack. I believe it's Jimmy that tells them that's where it is.
Because he is a robot, a super smart robot,
and he uses,
which,
yes.
If you wreck his metal, you might find skin.
Right, parts of him look like skin.
Like
if
data.
You dig underneath his robot arm, did you see it when his arm came off?
Yeah, when his arm comes off, you can see later in the episode, you can see he's got skin going on to like his, close to his wrist, and from there it's like a metallic hand.
Yeah.
So, I don't think the skin is real. I bet it's something like how on Commander Data on Star Trek, they've like simulated something that looks like skin, and then it can appear like he's wearing gloves. That makes the most sense, right? He's supposed to be a humanoid robot, like a human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Burrito Brothers is under attack, and they have to run off, and the girl, as Caitlin has pointed out, just is very upset that they have to go. So they sing her a quick happy birthday, or rather they don't sing her happy birthday because at that point, happy birthday song was not in the public domain.
You could
not use it. You had to pay every time you sang the song. So they just give a little, like, trill on the piano, and they say happy birthday from the Aquabats and hand her a cupcake.
With a candle on it.
One candle.
One single candle. And she's turning 18. I think.
You think she's turning 18? She could be turning 18 in that, yeah. It's tough to tell exactly, just from looking. So they all pile into the battle tram, and there's this awesome extended buckling and switching sequence, where, like, every single member has to buckle in, and you see the buckle. Every single person is, like, flipping a dozen switches. It's probably the longest one of those. And I'm hoping that partly they did this to show that when we drive in a car, we buckle up.
Yeah.
So that all the kids watching can be like, oh, they're buckled in. Safety first, everybody.
Safety first.
Yeah, I'm never going to say that.
You're never going to say safety first? But we know you buckle up when you ride in a car.
Because that's the only way to get on the road that you'll meet me.
Right.
But Lita never buckled up. You never buckled up on the way home from fair.
There wasn't a seatbelt, silly. It's a little different.
Right. For kids, there's special.
For kids, there's special rules.
But the Aquabats are very...
But I buckle up every time.
You know, the Aquabats are interested in safety when they're driving in the battle tram.
Why?
So...
You always want to put safety first.
Because how can they take care of other people and save the world if they don't buckle themselves in? Anyway, moving on. They arrive at the Burrito Brothers, but it's already burnt to the ground.
They're very devastated by this, too.
Because they
really
are so hungry, and they really wanted a burrito.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and there's, like, these shows in the middle of it where there's, like, this bat. They have a bat symbol. And this bat is like...
We'll talk about that one. I want to get to that because it hasn't come up yet.
Mm.
Can you hold that thought?
Yeah.
Okay. They find a card saying what they think says Manant. And they swear that they will find this person after they eat. So they all...
But they don't end up eating.
They try to, though, because they're about to. And then I don't know if Jimmy's scanning for food... But he realizes that there's something coming over the radio about tiny burgers.
Oh, I thought they were going to the burger place because they wanted burgers, and then they found out that it was being...
You know, I think it's both. I think
it's kind of both. They're like, oh, let's go get food.
Will we please get back to the broadcast?
Yes. If you'd like to take a break, Caitlin, you may, and come back in a few minutes. So
so you know, there will be different people over the broadcast. Like, next time there might be an Emily or... Julia, over the time we do broadcasts,
we'll invite multiple people and see who shows up. So, they show up at the Tiny Burgers, and there's no one around in terms of employees, but suddenly they're attacked by men wearing helmets that look like antenna.
Yeah, and they're just running around.
Ant heads. Yes, they're attacked by, like, ant heads. Caitlin is doing, showing us what it looks like with her fingers and sprouting antenna out of her head to show us. Very good likeness of what they look like. So,
what I liked about that part was that when they were punching him, they really only punched him in the helmet, which was...
Super ridiculous. Because when they're punching and there's a metal helmet, go down here, not up here!
See, I have in my notes that was a really awesome... fight scene, that I like the choreography of the fight scene. I wrote, choreographed fight scene is super good.
Oh, I'm not saying it wasn't good, I just thought it was very funny when they added that part in. He punches the helmet, and it's just like, ow.
And, yeah, ouch.
But it was, the one spot.
Oh, did we skip? Oh, we skipped the foamercial. The fight scene doesn't happen until after what I call foamercials, because they're commercials, but they're
gloopy.
Not. Really? Gloopy's?
Oh, Gloopy's the sponsor. Yeah.
Or,
I will tell you the commercial.
Harry Hyder. Yes,
Harry Hyder.
Go ahead.
This is Harry Hyder. So, when you are, let's say, your breath stinks, or you're chewing gum, when your mom don't want you to see it, Harry Hyder is a mustache, comes in all different things, even a pink Harry Hyder.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get them, they black the gum, and they black the bread. So, even buy one for your mother.
There you have it, everybody. Caitlin just gave us almost even better, if I could say that, commercial for Harry Hyder than Gloopy even came up with. Nice job, Caitlin.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I really wanted to add that applause.
All right, So after Harry Hyder commercial and the Aquabats come back, they have a fight scene. I thought it was good.
It was wonderful.
Helmeted ant men leave. And as they're, fleeing the scene, the Aquabats chase them out the door and find a DVD lying on the ground with the mark of Manant on it. So they're going to have to find Manant. They pile into the battle tram to watch the DVD. But Crash is distracted... by something really strange. There's a dog wearing a costume that's shaped like corn and it has a pointy thing on the head. So I'm like,
I think that was also supposed to be part of the corn.
Is this a corn dog or a dog at corn? Like, the point? And then he walks up to him, and it's a dog, okay? Everybody, he thinks it's a dog, not a human being, not a sentient being, but he walks up to it and says, "Hi, I'm Crash." So that's another one of my favorite bits.
I also like the fact that they had a real dog in there at first, and I'm curious whose dog they used, but they had a real dog, and then as soon as Crash walks up to him and says, "Hi, I'm Crash," it's clearly just a toy dog.
Yes, they switched dogs. We noticed that, but, you know, it's a show, it was and just, we love it, so that's fine.
I like the added hilarity of it. I don't know.
Looks so realistic from far away. So then they start the DVD up, but in order to do this, Jimmy the robot has to type in about, like, 400 keystrokes to get the DVD to work, and they all just look at him for about a
try turning minute. It off and turning it back on again.
Maybe they should have done that instead. So, and is it just me, or is something weird, like, about the way Bones looks? Like, his hair is really flat, or his goggles, something about his goggles are covering more of his eyebrows or something?
Maybe. I feel like that early on, their masks were, like, kind of off-kilter half the time.
Mm. What do you mean? What did off-kilter mean?
Like, sideways.
Like?
Yeah. Oh, careful, Caitlin, you're leaning on the stand where your mic is.
Mm-hmm.
No, you were leaning on this is
table.
Just don't lean on it. And so, they watch the DVD. The DVD immediately starts with the bad guy announcing, "I am Manant!" To which the crew react, "Manant, maybe we've been saying it wrong." But the Bat Commander isn't convinced. He goes, "Maybe Manant's been saying it wrong."
Manant!
Like, the fellow does not know his own name.
Oh
yeah, you never know.
So then, I kind of like how Manant is trying to tell them how awesome he is, but he's doing it with a bagel in his mouth.
Yes, because he's really just so small, and so he's holding up a bagel.
And he's going...
Do I know what he's doing? Since he's tiny, he's picking up a tiny rock and a regular-sized bagel, and a tiny rock about this big... is bigger than him because he's about that big.
And so for him, picking up a bagel is a huge, huge feat of strength to show off how strong he is, I guess. Maybe he's going to attack them with a bagel. I don't know. So they
could
cut, I think, to Crash, who is buried in sand up to the neck, which kind of like from a production standpoint makes me wonder how they did that. Like, it looks really good. There's just, he's... looks like he's buried up to the neck in sand. Almost. You know, right?
Yeah, it's
you
true.
Can see all the sand around him, and I'm kind of wondering, like, how you put something like this together.
It's probably, like, they have, like, a hole, and then they just have a board around there, and they have the sand around the head, so
it's
looks
a long,
like...
It's almost like a huge, huge bit of flooring around his neck. I think it's a really good job. It has me wondering, so I like that. So he's calling out for help, and we cut to a little bat cartoon, which Caitlin would love to tell us about right now.
Okay, so a bat cartoon... is about this sleepy bat that just woke up. He blasts his alarm clock with a weapon.
He must go through a lot of alarm clocks.
And he goes there. Here's the funny part. He's closing his eyes and not reaching the handle. When his eyes, and guess what?
What?
Then he finally opens it. Why didn't you just...
open your eyes to begin with, right?
Yeah.
Yes. I wish you guys could see what Caitlin is doing to show us the pantomime.
And guess what? His friend, since he's a bat, guess what he's doing? When he pours his milk into his cereal, the milk goes downwards because he's hanging upside down because he's a bat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, the part that confused me about this cartoon was when he first wakes up out of bed, there's a hairdryer on his floor. Okay?
Wait, no, the funny part is...
No, hear me out. Is the bed on the ceiling? And if so, does he have a hairdryer glued to his floor?
Here's the other funny thing. That dropped when he put it down. Then how did he blast his alarm clock with air?
I don't know. Yeah, see, these are the big mysteries of life. We don't know. This cartoon.
That is a gigantic mystery of life!
We'll have to keep wondering about that one. So, let's move on. There's a scene about Crash. Oh.
May I pause this moment? Guess who my mother knows? My mother knows Applebat!
I particularly know Crash just a little bit because I met him.
He met him. Ooh. I really wanted to add that, so I did.
All right. So I'll tell more Crash stories in a later point. Right now, I want to get back to the scene. So what happens is we have Crash. He's buried to the neck. Manette walks up to him and says, "Remember me?" Or I forget.
Yeah.
We meet again. I believe. And then you see a flashback of how Manette came into existence. Crash is a little kid. He's dressed like an acrobat still, yes, as a little kid. He's, yeah. As a child, he has a helmet, anti-negativity helmet.
Yeah, we know. Just like as he normally is. Just
as he normally is seen. Mm-hmm. So he's there. He finds the genie lamp. Out pops Rip Taylor, who I don't know from anything else, but apparently some people will. So, apologies to anyone that is offended that I have no idea who Rip Taylor is except for this episode.
He's okay, I don't know who he is either.
He's very funny. So, in the, like, 4 seconds that we see him, I like him. So, then, he says, "Thank you for freeing me, you have a wish." And little Crash's wish is for a part man, part ant, bad guy for my dolls to fight.
Makes sense, you know? Little kid.
Doesn't look like it's doing anything. Oh, now it is. Awesome. So, we're back. This is, we're trying again here. So we lost Caitlin, and we lost a small snippet of recording that we tried to make. But where we left off, we were talking about the genie, played by Rip Taylor, who I don't know much about, but we think he's funny.
Very funny.
And there's probably some other people that know more about him than us who could think about it in their brain right now. Right?
Go.
So.
Better be thinking.
So, Crash, little Crash, wishes for part man, part ant, for his bad guys to fight, for his dolls to fight. And he specifically wishes the half man, half ant, part man, part ant, to be a bad guy for his dolls to fight. So he's probably bad. That's maybe his backstory.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. This is his origin story. Anyway, he's about to interact with him, but then Crash's mom comes to the back door and shouts at him.
Who is actually Crash, just dressed up as a woman.
Crash
calling for him, so but it was entertaining. I like that.
So she chats, "Crash, did you break the toaster?"
And I'm curious what he did to break the toaster.
There's another episode where it's revealed that he tapes the fish to the television set. So
maybe shove fish in there. I don't know.
He had something with fish, or he's just kind of distracted child. I would be willing to believe either one, right?
Yes.
So anyway, flashback over. That's where Manant came from. Manant is pissed off at Crash for basically creating him and then abandoning him.
I do not remember that the genie grants you a wish, but you know, it's a kid. Kids forget things. Mm. It's all good.
So anyways, Manant has decided to steal Crash's power. So he takes, like, a little bit out of Crash's neck with a syringe, and he takes more with a hose. And this part, like, kind of gets me in a weird way. Like, I don't know why I hate this part. Like, I'm so upset at Manant for manipulating Crash this way. He, like, shows him these pictures, and one is a picture, and it's winter is coming, and this sheep has been shorn of her coat. So she's so cold, and Crash is just, like, so upset
so
about
sad.
It. And then
a poor, innocent sheep.
The next one is a baby calf wearing roller skates pushed down the stairs.
You can't even tell that it was pushed down the stairs, but he makes sure he says that it was pushed down the stairs.
Yes. So terrible.
Which makes it so much more evil.
What's very evil? What's gonna happen? And Crash is so upset that he's like, normally he'd be growing huge because he's getting emotional, but all of that power is going into these large barrels they're filling with his, they have written on the barrels, grow juice. So you know what's going to be in them. It's whatever chemical is in Crash that creates the super growth. So anyway, stealing Crash's power like that. We cut back to the battle tram, inside of which Jimmy and MCBC, the Bat Commander, are sitting there talking about Burger Huts and finding Crash. Because by now, they've gotten to the point in the DVD where Manette says, "And by now you've noticed that Crash is gone." And they all turn and look,
and actually, Crash isn't there.
I think the Bat Commander asks Crash aloud, "Is that true, Crash?"
Yes. "Is that true, Crash?" And then they all look, and he's just not there. And they're like, "No."
So then, sitting next to Jimmy, he asks him, saving Crash is more important than burgers, right?
Right?
They're just so hungry, you know?
Jimmy nods, yes, you're right.
But Jimmy's got it together, he's good.
The Bat Commander looks super skeptical, though. Like,
he's like, you know, food. Crash. He's torn.
Yes. So they drive out to... I can't remember what the impetus is for driving out to the edge of town where the anthill is.
Yeah, they saw the anthill. They were like, oh, there's a giant anthill over there. Let's go get Crash.
So they drive to it, and Crash is buried in the sand right next to this.
Which I thought they ran him over.
Yes, I think that was what it was meant to look like. Because when he looks up at the underside of the battle tram, he's underneath it.
Yeah.
You can tell they're just driving next to him, but as... Again, as before, I wonder how they made him appear to be buried in such a large area and managed to not hit him like there's a stunt driver driving the battle tram and that doesn't hit him. I was really impressed with that.
That's true.
So, it seems very dangerous.
They do all their own stunts.
Yes, which is kind of amazing and pretty cool. Not a big surprise. I have seen and read that the Bat Commander had done lots of stage stunts prior to this. They had their show.
They're just all actual stuntmen from other things. And they're like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, at least the Bat Commander seems to just kind of be a stunt guy as part of his personality. So, underneath the battle tram, they find a cartoon!
Yay!
I love these little segues where they do a cartoon of them, anime style.
I like how it continues, too. It's like where they left
episode.
Off.
So good. Do you want to talk about it, or should I?
You can go ahead.
Okay. So, this cartoon involves a space puppy and space bees.
I like how the space bees have helmets, because how else would they survive in space, obviously?
Yet, none of the Aquabats have helmets.
Exactly. And neither does the space puppy.
We know that's not real, though. Right?
Yeah.
Soon as he has a dream in which this puppy has gone down a moon crater, and he's calling after it, Puppy! And so then he wakes up, and actually, like, they stumble out of the battle tram, and he follows this puppy.
First, they had to have a smooth landing from a spring.
Yes, they just have a spring installed at the front of the battle tram
for that exact scenario.
Heading for the moon,
and they need a nice, soft landing.
Mm-hmm. So they land, they do look a little dizzy. They forgotten to latch the cage for the space bees, and the space bees get out and chase them around.
Do we ever find out where they got space bees to begin with?
No.
It's like the first time they go into space and they have space bees.
Again, I think it's in case we are in space heading towards the moon.
And we might need the space bees for space honey.
Space honey, yes.
They are always hungry.
We're on the same wavelength,
I think,
you and me, Lena.
Yes.
Okay. So, while the space bees are chasing the other four around, Bat Commander chases the space puppy, which is sort of either an illusion or... a sort of hypnotic suggestion or something?
Yeah.
He's
just kind of following it.
Falls down the crater and winds up captured by moon cheese. End of snippet of episode. So, yeah, moon cheese has got him. His last line is, Where's the puppy?
Where's the puppy? There's a lot of puppies in this episode.
Is there?
Crash?
Yes.
And then,
So then after the cartoon is done, they all laugh and wriggle out from under the battle tram. Now, I wonder if this is a continuity error, because Crash was clearly trapped, buried up to the neck.
And he was underneath. How did he get out?
But he just comes out. He just gets out.
He's like, all right.
Fine. Everything's good. Managed to get out somehow, magically.
The puppy helped him.
Maybe. They do like digging. So Manant is nearby, right, about to terrorize some picnickers with his ant slaves.
Yes.
Which he has just sort of
For some reason, the picnickers decide to still put their picnic basket and blanket down, even though there's a giant ant right on the hill.
Maybe they were distracted by their picnic. It's so delicious.
It did have fried chicken in it. Mm-hmm. We find that out later.
So, at this point, I've written, Man Ant wants revenge and fear, because he talks about doing this everywhere. Soon, nowhere will be safe from the ants. Like, the ants are going to overrun everything.
Yeah.
To what end?
He's the bad guy, though. That's what Crash wished for. So, of course, he has to have some crazy mastermind plan.
Okay.
So, he's probably like, take over the world.
By
but
ants.
He can't. Because, you know.
Yeah.
he's
trying though. He's got the beginnings.
So he's controlling these ants via his antenna.
Yeah.
You can sort of see the sonar or whatever going out.
Which I think was actually just like giant circular things that they actually. Right? Was that the circles?
It was represented by circles. I assumed that was some sort of post-production animation technique.
I don't know. To me, it looked almost like it was actual, like, they just kept...
No, because they expand. They start in the middle of his head and expand outwards. They weren't just holding up, like, wire hoops or something. That does sound like it's up their alley,
but
it's
not what's
happening.
I feel like it would be something they would do. I wasn't the